It is Bronze and Modern Gods. I'm John. That guy there.
Hey, John, how you doing?
That random
that random guy on the TV screen.
Bonus episode time. Sorry we're a day late, but deal with it. We got lives, people. We do have Ali with the Instagram Market Watch. We've got our friend John with the comic NFT Market Watch. But more importantly, most importantly, we have you here with a segment we like to call Viewer Mail.
You've got mail.
So let's get into it. Richard, what is your first piece of viewer mail?
My first piece is from a gentleman named Anon Emouse.
Oh, he must be great.
He must be. I'm sick of the commercialization of comic collecting. It's disgusting, and it's caused huge companies to come in and completely take over the market. We need a character like Punisher to come in and clean house, get rid of the corporate greed taking place.
Are we referring to like Disney and Warner Media, or
I think he's, you know, if you think about the last couple of, let's say the last 10 years of comic book collecting has been driven not by comic books, but by movies, mm-hmm. be they Marvel movies or DC movies. They have driven the market. And I think that literally billions of dollars that has brought in has commercialized comics to a level that if we were back in the 50s and 60s, when comic books were, you know, they're just little funny books on the newsstand and didn't have those kind of exterior forces. I think that may be what he's referring to.
We will never have the days where someone like Steve Gerber could come in and write a title like Defenders any way he wanted to, you know, and have strange stories like the Headman saga. We can never have someone like Roger Stern have a run on Spider-Man with Ron Frenz and take it in the directions he wants to. That's just not the way it's done anymore. The decisions about these characters, the arc that they're going to take, the next 3 to 5 years in planning, it's all done at a corporate level now. It's done with the trademark and brand in mind over story. That is a long-winded way of saying, yep, sorry, dude, I agree.
Yeah, and if you think about it, the comic book industry without those external forces was doomed.
Yeah, it was over.
Yeah. if it hadn't been for those early Marvel movies, it hadn't been for that influx of money from Hollywood, I don't think we would have a Marvel and DC as independent. You know, it may be some part of Hasbro or something like that, but we wouldn't have them as an independent company that's producing new comic books.
Remember the 25-year rule. Marvel was bankrupt at that time, and it smelled like the end. And, you know, now it seems like everything is a constant company-wide crossover or an event. And that's why it's these things are intellectual property commodities now. The art, the craft, I think some things break through on the independent label. God bless the indies for keeping the art part alive. But even then, I would say the majority of independent comics are created with an eye towards selling the property as a movie.
Yeah. Look at the stuff like James Tynion is doing. He's being innovative in the field, but that innovation is still targeted towards having that property in, you know, taken over for an option and particularly, you know, made into a television series. I don't think we don't have that indie market that existed back in, you know, first comics and, you know, Fantagraphics and things like that, where you had true independent artists putting out these mags without any support from a large corporation. They were just putting them out there for the community. The community ate them up.
That's still happening. Richard and Mr. Emouse. Emouse. Enon Emouse. It's happening on Kickstarter. It's happening on Substack. It's happening in fan-financed initiatives where, again, people like the aforementioned Ron Frenz, along with his longtime writing partner and former Marvel editor-in-chief Tom DeFalco, they're fan-sourcing money to do their own independent comic, which is a superhero comic throwback to the 80s. And, you know, it's not Spider-Man, it's their own creation. But if you still want that, you're gonna have to pony up a little bit and go on Kickstarter. I mean, that's just kind of the way it is, unfortunately.
Yeah, you're right. I forgot about that. You know, Kickstarter, Indiegogo, Patreon has some really interesting things going on as well. So instead of, you know, them finding space on the news rack, they're going directly to the fans and having them fund the production of these comics. And I think that's an awesome thing.
Put your money where your mouth is. Support.
Right. Vote with your wallet. And that's a great way of finding the things that you like and supporting the authors.
Yep. Hey, just a reminder, if you want to support us, follow us at Facebook and Instagram at Bronze and Modern Gods. Visit our website, buy a t-shirt, hit like, subscribe, hit the notification bell. All of these things support us. You don't have to send us a wad of 50s, but that would help too. All right, moving on to my first piece of viewer mail. Don't send us a wad of 50s, please. John. This comes from our Gmail address, which is bronzeandmoderngods@gmail.com. John, I recently bought the Avengers 8 NFT, which was an uncommon featuring that awful green cover. Agreed. Within a couple of minutes, I listed it on VV's market as an auction, with the starting bid being $6.99. So I essentially bought it with the intention of flipping it. The auction ended earlier today with the winning bid being $166. Good job. It was a painless transaction because it was all handled by VV. Now I have a nice little pot of gems for those big boy NFTs that are bound to appear any day. Just thought I would share that with you in case you guys were interested in hearing about other people's experiences with selling / auctioning NFTs through VV. Thanks for the great YouTube channel and stay safe. He stole your tagline, Richard.
Hey, it's universal.
I know. Agreed. That is how I have funded every single one of my VV purchases since the first week this went live. I got an uncommon, I forget if it was an ultra rare, and I sold it for a stack of gems. And that is what I've been using ever since then to make all of my purchases on VV. And I've gotten my Immortal Hulk secret rare with that stack and all, everything else that dropped this past week. So absolutely, that is the way to do it, right?
Yeah. If you can fund that particular hobby by selling, you know, properties on, you know, selling comics there, it's a great way of growing your collection over time. That's what I did. I ended up getting an ultra rare of the Avengers 8, sold a little early, unfortunately. And I end up with like 1200 gems. So I'm sitting on that and I'm waiting for something that I want. I wasn't really interested in the Avengers 8. I'm more interested in, you know, some of the other titles that may come in the future. I'm really hoping Marvel really digs down into the real keys, the keys that people really want to see, like Fantastic Four number 5, or, you know.
A little teaser for the NFT report coming up later. They're starting to dip into some keys, as we saw this week. I should mention that comment came from someone on Instagram, Comic Collecting on a Budget. So shout out to you, Comic Collecting on a Budget. Good question.
Great. It's a great tip. All you got to do is if you dig in for $6.99, it's almost guaranteed at this point in the market that whatever you buy is going to be worth more than $6.99 in a period of time. So yeah, definitely dig in.
Cheapest common right now is 15 gems. So you've already doubled. Yeah, there you go. Especially if you're like Richard and you hate Kang and you have no emotional attachment to it, get rid of it.
That's my philosophy for comic collecting. Yeah, I buy things, I keep the things I like, and I sell the things that I don't have as much interest in.
All right, what do you have next?
My next one is from EL. Great episode. I'll take a coverless FF number 1 over the secret rare NFT version all day. Thanks for the reply email. What up, Tinker Balls?
Where is Tinker Balls?
he normally is around here, and he may show up. He was wandering around someplace else with his sister. Yeah, I'm surprised he's not here. But yeah, I completely agree with you, EL. I would take a coverless FF1 over the NFT. But that just may be us. You know, that must be the way we collect. I would want that physical copy in my hand and the history behind it over the, you know, the NFT. But other people may feel differently. They may want the NFT because it's easier to deal with. It's easier to sell, you know, when they get the whole process down pat. It's up to how you want to collect and what you consider the keys in your collection.
Richard, you ignorant slut. I will take the secret rare NFT over.
Would you really? Seriously?
Seriously, at this point, because I'll talk about it later. How's that for a
All right.
another tease? All right. I'll tell you why. Now, I could be 100% wrong, but I'll tell you why later on.
I'm all yours.
My next piece of viewer mail is also from EL, who was very active this week. We picked both of these comments for a reason. EL also says, great show. Love you guys. Love you back. Thoughts on digital comics selling for more than some low-grade physical issues? Marvel number one and FF number one secret rare NFTs are going for 30K plus, 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 plus. Are they, though, 30K gems? Are they going for anything physical, money, cash, 30K? No, at least not on eBay. It may be happening on Telegram or Facebook or some other thing that I'm not seeing. But on eBay, the highest sales for secret rares have been $2,600 and $2,800 cash. I haven't seen any, I've seen some listed, but I haven't seen any sales of those two secret rares. Now, again, I said I was teasing why I would take a secret rare over a coverless FF number one. So I won't get into it now, but two very great comments, EL. Thank you very much. Richard.
Yeah. Oh, I was just going to say, you know, that makes total sense. There's a huge difference between what people list something to sell for and what the actual price is, especially on sites like eBay. So it's not surprising that people are wishing to get 30,000 when in reality that it translates to, you know, a tenth of that.
Yep. All right. What's your next piece of viewer mail?
My next piece of viewer mail is from Charlotte Mendoza. Hello. What are your thoughts on the CGC's registry, not the census? And do you use it yourselves? Thanks.
Ooh, good question.
Yeah, the CGC registry. CGC has a way, and this is totally self-serving on their part, but they have a way of creating a registry, which is a listing of the comic books that you own that are CGC slabbed. And usually these collections are put together with a certain theme, like early Spider-Man. So Spider-Man number one through, let's say, 300.
Marvel picture frame covers.
Right, right. Venus. So you pick a theme, you list the books, the CGC books that you own that belong to that theme, and your collection is given a value based on the grade and page quality and the other, you know, other factors of those books in your collection. And it's a big contest between people who can afford these kinds of collections to see who gets the highest score and who is on the top of the leaderboard for a particular type of collection. We've seen a lot of news about that recently because someone who had a large early Spider-Man collection put it up for sale, and there were some big ticket books that sold out of that collection.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So do I use it myself? No, I don't collect graded books that way. I don't collect one through, you know, 50 or whatever the particular range, or, and I don't collect on a certain theme. I collect books that I find either visually interesting or books that are historically significant to me. And that is so specific that I don't think the registry really fits my style of collecting. There are plenty of people out there who do collect one through 50, have long box, you know, they have big boxes of these graded books, but that's just not me. What about you, John?
I've never used the registry, and the thought I always had was it is pretty much a big appendage swinging contest.
Yes, it is.
You know, it doesn't really relate to me and my collecting, but I could see, like, really, like your example about the Venus registry, that would be fun trying to put together a run, you know, and it's such a tough run to put together that I probably would try to register it in the registry had I ever gotten all 19 issues. However, you know, I get all 19 issues, I scrape, I save, I do it, I put it in the registry, then someone gets a 5.5 for my Venus 19 5.0, and all of a sudden I'm no longer the head of the registry. So I don't know. It seems dated.
Potentially. There are some other advantages. If you're looking for a specific book, and you know CGC certificate numbers are available, you may be able to find it. You know, if you've got if you're looking for an old book that you used to own and you write down your cert number, this registry may be a way that you can at least get in contact with the person and maybe reacquire that book if it's for sale, especially in super rare books. You know, you're looking at something that there just aren't that many copies out there of. You know, it's a great way of keeping track of those copies. And, you know, when you have the means to acquire, you know, a Batman number one or what have you, you can have some avenues to approach people who may own that book.
You bring up a good point, and that is the registry, how it's supposed to be used. But did you know that if you crack a book and resubmit it, or if you do something, a slab gets cracked and you get a reholder, do you know you're supposed to turn in the old label so they can delete it from the registry? Who does that? Do you ever do that?
Never done it. I actually have a book that's coming back that had mechanical error. It was basically the label's incorrect. Yeah. So I don't return the labels when they come back. So
who knows how accurate the registry actually is? I'm sure it's a small percentage, but still, it's that's always been a hair in my nostril.
But yeah, this as you said, this may be outdated. This has been around for a while
since the launch.
So it's one of those things I think that people who have the means to acquire a significant collection use as a matter of gauging their collection versus other people's collections. Yeah. But the rest of us PNs who don't have, you know, AF 1 through, you know, Amazing Spider-Man 1 through 300, all 9.6s, not as useful.
I know what they can do. They can offer services instead of imaging when they slab your book. They can save it as an NFT, and then you can display it virtually using AR.
Hey, don't give them ideas like that. Oh, yeah, charge them for those kinds of ideas.
You gotta back that Brinks truck over here if you want the rest of these ideas. All right, my next piece of viewer mail is from our good friend Nick Parrish, who reminds me, hey, John, it was me who asked about showcasing books you just personally like that aren't necessarily high spec books. Thank you, Nick. That was a great suggestion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Speaking of spec books, though, I must say that I enjoyed watching you and Richard's live sale last Friday. Oh, thank you. Before watching it for the first time, I thought it would mostly feature graded comics and only be for people with a few hundred dollars to spend, if only. However, I was glad to see you guys sell mostly raw books and sell them at accessible prices for the average collector. I do plan to tune in again. Well, I'm glad you say that because tonight, no, I'm kidding.
Thank you so much. Yeah, John and I, we have so much fun doing the live sales. They are a mixture of us selling books so that we can buy more books, but also a mixture of us relating to people who have become our friends. You know, people have theme songs when they show up, and you know, they're just part of the community around Bronze and Modern Gods, and we love all you guys.
You know, you made it when we have a theme song for you when you appear in the chat and we start singing Bucky's Books.
Or Turtle Toy Huntress's
theme song. Yeah. Turtle Toy Huntress. If you have a piece of viewer mail for us, please leave it in the comments or email us at bronzeandmoderngods@gmail.com and you could be featured in a future episode. But right now, let's fire up that modem, dial into America Online. It is time for the Comic NFT Watch. Richard, two new drops happened this week.
Yeah, and they're not crap.
They're not crap. They're X-Men number 4, first appearance of the Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver and the Brotherhood of the Evil Mutants, and Amazing Spider-Man number 361, the first full appearance of Carnage.
Very topical.
Nice to see some keys happening now. Yes. Now we're on it. It is quite strange, though, that the NFT for ASM 361 featured the second print cover of that issue. Maybe an error. Maybe someone not
it just goes to show you, I don't think the people who are running this are comic book people. These are.
Let me stop you there. I can cut you off. One of the co-founders owned a comic book shop at the age of 17 when he was growing up. So something happened along the line. I don't know if a designer at Marvel gave them the wrong cover. We don't know. But there are some hardcore bona fides with this company. I got to give them props. But what's interesting this week also, Richard, and you and I were texting furiously about this, a bit of a panic this week on the VV app because the marketplace was still visible, but you could not purchase anything. The ability to purchase was offline for a bit. So what happened is instead of taking the marketplace down like they do when there's high traffic during drops, they usually take the marketplace down to really conserve that bandwidth. They did not take the marketplace down. So what ended up happening is people were trying to sell things. Nothing was selling. And they thought, well, I better lower the price. And then nothing still sold for a long time. So I better lower the price again. So you had all the values cratering over a few hour period. It was scary. At one point, commons were down to a dollar.
See, that's when you buy. You know, we talked earlier about having gems in your bank. That's when you start buying things left and right.
I was desperately trying to buy. And I couldn't. I kept getting the error message. So finally, I started looking. I saw the VV Twitter, and they said, yes, we realize you can't buy on the marketplace. We're working on it right now. And then I took a nap. All right. I wake up from the nap. 30 minutes earlier, they had resolved the problem. So I go into the marketplace and all the prices were right back up where they were.
Of course they are. Of course they are. It's a great opportunity. This is like the stock market, right? And there are forces that are maybe unseen that are affecting the value of these NFTs. And if you strike right at the right time, you can get a real bargain.
Yeah. Now to the point of the market watch that I teased earlier. Why would I want an FF1 secret rare right now over a coverless FF number one? Why am I so bullish on this? Well, because VV announced this week they're getting even closer to allowing users to cash out to other cryptocurrency. They even say it could be just a few weeks away. This, guys, I'm telling you right now, this is going to be a game changer. It will be interesting to see what happens to the comic NFT market once these things hit OpenSea. Once other people that have Bitcoin, Dogecoin, whatever you want, are able, Ethereum, they're able to convert and buy this. It could be really significant. So there are other people on YouTube that I watch that are super bullish on this, that are under the optimistic belief that some of these could hit hundreds of thousands of dollars fairly quickly. I don't know about that, but it would be nice. I have some.
Yeah. We're in a Wild West kind of period. There is so little data around this that I could easily see there being some huge spike, temporary spike, but a spike nonetheless, that exceeds the real value of some of these NFTs, and you may see $10,000, $50,000 or gems for a brief period of time. If you could strike at the right time and sell, you're going to make a fortune.
Let's put it this way. If you've got a secret rare that's worth 3,000 gems right now, and all of a sudden it's available on the open market to convert those gems into cash or other cryptocurrency, we have to wait and see what the exchanges are going to be. What are the exchange rates going to be? It's really a wait and see. People who say they have the answers are lying to you because nobody has the answers right now.
Nobody does. And that, to me, that kind of makes this an exciting frontier, you know, where there is no one in front of us who knows more than the rest of us. You know what I mean? So we are all discovering the boundaries and the capabilities of this whole experience together. So if you keep at it, and you know, like you, John, have been following this, you ride that wave and you're perfectly positioned a year from now when this becomes normalized. Yeah. You will have all that experience and a lot of really early NFTs that are probably going to accumulate significant value.
VV and these other NFT companies have compared to the mainstream, they have a very small user base right now. It's mm-hmm. very specialized. It's very targeted. It's very, very active, but they're very much Uber fans, Uber geeks. They're into this. Vivi is the first app that is really kind of, it lets old folks like us on board very easily. Right? You can buy gems with using Apple Pay. It's a comic book, even though Richard says it's not, you know, it's something you recognize. And you know, so they need someone or something to push them to that next level when this hits mainstream acceptance, mm-hmm. which, you know, a year. Remember the internet, Richard? Remember the interwebs?
Yes. No, you know, it has a lot of potential. Let's put it that way. But I don't think you really answered the question. So I have my coverless FF number one, probably still a $10,000 book, you know, knowing the prices nowadays. And you have your secret rare NFT, right?
Yep.
So why would you pick that over a physical book that I can hand to a dealer and get cash?
FF1, 60,000 minted. Out of that 60,000, 600 were secret rare. That means there are only 600 in existence, period. Done. How many FF number ones are out there? I'm going to guess a lot more than 600.
Yeah, there's more than that in the census, I think.
But still saying there's, yeah. You know, and out of those, how many are in better condition than a coverless FF number one? Mm-hmm. So I was very specific when I said I would prefer a secret rare at this time.
Okay.
I want to see what would happen. I want to see.
Yeah. Okay. I could see that. I mean, let's, if we bumped it up instead and we said let's say you could have a 5.0 Fantastic Four number one.
5.0. Nope. Done. I'll take it.
Okay, so the condition is really what the key factor here is.
The condition and the love. I love mm-hmm. Santa Jack, and it's the start of the Marvel Universe. If something that nice was offered to me, yeah, I'm going to take it because I want to look at it and I want to flip it over. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
A coverless?
Yeah, the coverless part is I can understand the reluctance there. But yeah, I want to have the physical book. I want to have my box full of my, you know, my yep. babies that I can hold close as opposed to on some server somewhere.
And again, I know I say this a lot, but I want to really stress it. I still love collecting comics, but I love this NFT stuff. I don't know what it is. It's hitting my serotonin centers. maybe I've been a closet compulsive gambler all these years and just never realized it, but I love it. And
look, Dad, we get gambling and comics.
Exactly. it's great. And I'm excited because I always know when I get in on early on something, I've been on this earth long enough to trust my gut and mm-hmm. be an early adopter on certain things. And it's always worked out. I've never been burnt. I could possibly be burnt in the future, but this is the same feeling I got when I was out of advertising as a copywriter and I saw the internet coming in 1993, 1994, when I was working as a copywriter at an ad agency in Cleveland. And someone said, oh, we have to start an interactive division. Who wants this? And nobody raised their hand. And my hand went right up. And I said, I'll lead it. 2 years later, I was the head. And it started me on a career in digital marketing that I do to this day because I was into it. And this is the same rush I'm getting.
No, I can see it. There definitely is a ton of potential here. Mm. The problem I see is a lot of that potential is based on zeitgeist, really. You know, it's the community has to be able to buy in and stay bought in to this to be something. If at some point the focus changes to something else, you know, this may lose some steam.
The community, the comic community, is a giant battleship that takes years to turn. Okay, you can lean on that rudder as hard as you want to. but it's going to go. I've seen it. CGC. Mm-hmm. How dare they put a book in plastic? I will never, ever do that in my life. I think that's so counterintuitive to what comic book collecting is about. It's about the art and the smell. Here we are 20 years later. CGC is accepted. Right. Pressing is restoration. How dare you? They should find all the first pressing video I ever saw on YouTube. The guy was wearing a ski mask because he was afraid to show his identity.
Wow.
Right? So I don't listen to the industry or the hobby. The hobby needs to be pulled by the nostrils like a bull and led mm-hmm. a lot of times. And I know it sounds super friggin' arrogant right now, but it's the truth. Meanwhile, speaking of being pulled by the nostrils and dragged, kicking and screaming, DC have finally announced their first comic book NFTs, which will not be on the VV app. However, you must register for DC Fandom, which is coming this week, and you will get a free comic book NFT.
See, I'm excited about this. This has potential because of the limited ways that you can get this.
Correct. And they're first.
Yes, their first one. I don't know if they offer a method. I'm sure they will eventually, if they don't have now, of trading these so the people who weren't able to make the Fandom or can get them. But this has, to me, some real rarity in terms of that availability. And, yeah, it's the first from DC.
I mean, how many people are going to sign up for Fandom?
I'm going to. I wasn't going to, but I will now.
You and Evan?
Yeah, probably.
I'm going to sign up, too. I'm signing up to get the NFT.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Although last year's Fandom was pretty interesting, I have to say.
Yeah. So, interesting times ahead. It doesn't stop here with watching the market. Every week, we also are joined for the Instagram market watch by our friend Ali at Elite_Comics11. And Richard's got his dancing hands ready. So let's go there now. And let's bring him on right now. Here is Ali from Elite_Comics11. Hey, Ali, what's going on?
Hey guys, how's it going?
It's going okay. Richard, how are you?
Good. We're all good.
Okay, just checking. If this is your first time watching, this is the Instagram Market Watch where Ali gives us a rundown on some big sales that have happened over the past week. Ali, tell everybody where they can find you, what you do.
Yeah, hi everyone. So I'm Ali. I'm from at Elite_Comics11 on Instagram. We are the platform's premier consignment page. So if you want to head over to our page, you'll see a ton of books going up for sale daily. And we can also help you sell books of your own. So check it out. But anyways, I'm here as we usually are this week to share three of the, you know, highlight three sales from our page in the past week or so. So I'll go ahead and get started on the first one. So this is Eternals number one. So it was a CGC 9.8 with white pages, really nice copy. It sold for $2,500. So yeah, I mean, we've seen two trailers now, right?
Yeah, it's happening. It's coming.
I'm excited.
I do like the fact that the new trailer addresses my main concern head on right at the beginning, which was, where were you when Thanos was destroying everybody?
That's a pretty important question.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of, and I don't have the data in front of me, but I know that this book has been higher. It kind of, you know, it's not as high as it's been, but I think part of it is people are still trying to figure out what the movie is actually about and who these people are. So I don't know if you guys want to get into that.
Oh, yeah. Well, Richard, tell us the GPA. What's going on?
Well, you know, the 2500, the GPA is 2640 on this book. So there's definitely was a great price. This book has, or this movie has suffered from the fact it's been delayed because of the C word. Yes, and stretched out. So any kind of buzz that was been generated from any marketing campaign for this book is fizzled out. And so that is kind of, I think, held the prices to something less than they could have been if the movie was released last November.
And it's pretty high concept. Basically the story is millions of years ago, some space gods named the Celestials came to Earth and they saw what was going on with primitive man, and then they decided to do a genetic experiment, and they created three different species. The deviants, which live underwater and are lizard-like. The humans, which, you know, that's us. Hey, what's up? And the Eternals, which are a higher evolved state of humanity that live in the mountains of Olympia. So after 5,000 or after all these years of evolution, the Celestials return to check on their experiment, and they are going to judge us, and they will decide who will rule the Earth of these three species. So that's the Jack Kirby concept. It looks to be pretty close. I mean, right down to the Eternal Thena, which is being played by Angelina Jolie, falling in love with the deviant Crow, you know, Romeo and Juliet star-crossed lovers subplot there. So I'm kind of excited. I mean, I know a lot of people are like, Eternals, what is it? But I think this might surprise people.
Yeah, I'm hoping that sorry, Ellie.
After that Oreo, it wasn't particularly short, but I don't know how many more people are going to be surprised after your overview.
Well, I mean, if you've read the book, I mean, it's all there in the book. Yeah.
That happens for these comics. You know, you look at the comic as kind of being a spoiler for whatever's going to be in the movie. But yeah, so that was a good buy at 2500. I think you have an opportunity here in the next few months to capitalize that if you're looking to make make some money off of it, or if you're looking to have a book for long terms. I still think it's a good price.
It was a better buy 20 years ago, and it was in dollar bins everywhere. Yeah. So.
Do you guys see these characters? I mean, are they sticking around? Or are they going to continue past this movie? What do you guys think?
I think they're trying to create a tentpole. I think they, you know, the Avengers, everyone's aging out of the Avengers. So it either has to be replacement Avengers like Ironheart, mm-hmm. or you've got to have another super team. And, you know, I don't see kids getting excited about an Icarus action figure.
Yeah. I mean, to me, you also have to look at the amount of money that they have invested in the talent for these movies. Angelina Jolie does not come cheap. So I don't see her being in five or six movies over the next couple of phases of the MCU. I could see it being a vehicle to introduce other characters, you know, kind of a player behind the scenes, but I really don't see this being a long-term team that is going to exist beyond this movie.
It might surprise everyone. Remember the very first MCU movie, Iron Man? Everyone was like, why are they doing Iron Man? B-list, C-list. And then they announced Robert Downey Jr. and everybody's like, oh, isn't he like a mess? and look what it did. So this studio has the capability of surprising people. I'm being enthusiastic. I'm being positive here.
All right. So the next one, Incredible Hulk number 180. Some controversy here about what this is and isn't. We'll get into that. But this one was a CGC 8.5 off-white to white pages. It also sold for $2,500. So yeah, I want to hear about it. Is this the first or second appearance of Wolverine? And what is the criteria for a first appearance, John and Richard?
Hit that GPA first, Richard. Let's get that.
The GPA for this book, this is another $2,500 sale. The GPA was 2808. So another good buy for this book. To me, this is his first appearance. There is an entire panel on the last page of 180 with Wolverine standing there saying his name in big letters that he's Wolverine. Okay. I don't know how else he could, you know, what you want to, I don't know how it could be anything else other than a first appearance.
John, Richard, you ignorant slut. No, actually, one thing I've learned in my job is to never get set in tradition. Never get set in your ways. Always be willing to pivot. Always be willing to learn something new. And that applies here. I grew up with Overstreet Price Guide for decades saying Hulk 180 was the first cameo of Wolverine and Hulk 181 is the first full appearance of Wolverine. Never the twain shall meet. And 181 will always be more expensive than 180. People change. Perceptions change. This is different than X-Men Annual 14, where you've got Gambit in it for a few panels. They don't say his name. He's in the shadows. And it was supposed to come out after 266. Okay. Mm-hmm. That was just a scheduling error. This is different. He's in full costume, in a full almost splash page at the end saying, I'm Wolverine. You know, he's got the funky claws. He's got the little kitty cat whiskers, which were cute. Why'd they get rid of those? So I've learned to change and accept that this is probably the first appearance of Wolverine now.
Wow.
Yeah.
I just want an excuse to say, Richard, you ignorant slut again.
But something I've learned over time is that regardless of what your personal opinions are, the masses, the market will speak as to where they put their money, and they're putting their money behind Hulk 181. So it's immaterial what we choose as the first appearance. The market says it's 181.
I do think there's a generational shift, though. I think 181 is so far out of reach for the youngins, the young folk. So they're stamping their feet saying, no, 180 is the first appearance.
I don't know. I think $2,500 is still out of reach of most people. I think Wolverine number one, the limited series, I think is really the, if you can't afford these Hulks from the 70s, people gravitate towards that because that's still at least under $1,000 for a
night. That's true. Well, yeah. Speaking of affordable books, Ali.
All right, the last one. Well, what can I say? So Amazing Fantasy number 15. This is, of course, the first appearance of Spider-Man. This one was a CGC 2.5 off-white to white pages. I mean, the hottest book on the planet, especially the last month or so. This one sold for $31,000 during one of our Elite live sales. So this one was actually during a live sale.
You know what? You know, this is actually inaccurate. The first appearance of Spider-Man was Ultimate Fallout 4. Everyone knows that. So the GPA on this book is $30,000. 31 is still a good buy. This book is just on fire. It is the premier book in the Silver Age at this point. And very few Golden Age books can outpace it. So buy this book now if you can afford it. $30,000, $31,000, it's going to be a bargain if we look back in 5 years.
And look at this book. It presents really well for a 2.5. I mean, you've got the little chip out of the top corner. But other than that, you know, it looks great. So I'd be happy with this if I had it as a 2.5. Yeah. I wonder if I can trade some VV gems for it.
If you can, let me know.
Okay. Some of those. Ali, remind everybody where you are and where they can find you.
Sure. Head over to @elite_comics11 on Instagram. Check out our page, tons of books, and send us a DM if you have a book to sell.
Always fun. And you have a new host that's starting.
Yes, we're excited. We're going to have Rage Theo come on, actually starting. And so we're excited. Rage is a good friend of mine, so it's great to add him into the mix. I also did want to mention, if people are going to be at New York Comic Con next week, Elite Comics 11 is going to be there at booth 3226. So it'd be nice to hang out with some people from the community if they're around.
That would be great. All right. Thanks. And we'll see you next week.
Thanks, Ali. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Ali. There's no Tinkerballs cameo this week.
No, I'm sorry. I don't even know where he is. He's pouting, apparently.
From now on, before we start recording, you have to have Tinkerballs by the scruff of the neck and just be holding him off camera.
Oh, he'll be all over me as soon as I stop recording.
Of course. Hey, if you have not followed us on Facebook and Instagram, how many times do I have to beg you? Bronze and Modern Gods is the place to be. If you like this video, like it. If you want to see more, subscribe. If you want to know when, like today, it came a day late. If you hit that notification bell, you'd know. And leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. We love you guys. We love seeing you every week. We will see you on Monday. Richard?
Yes, everybody stay safe.